welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Today I'm speaking with Savannah Tate. Savannah is truly one of the perfect definitions of an extraordinary mom. She is the mom of six little ones, including three triplets who are now 18 months old. Now, their family's been through a lot in the past year as one of their triplets, their son Hayes, battled for his life as he fought cancer. He is now past the treatments, and today she's sharing with us about that journey. She wants to raise awareness for children's cancer research and the underfunding that goes in that direction. Oh, it just breaks my heart hearing her story, but I'm so encouraged and inspired by the strength of their family and their willingness to put themselves out there for the benefit of other families that might be struggling in the same way. I love what she has to say about going through hard things as a family, and I love her perspective on motherhood. So let's get to it with Savannah Tate. All right. I want to welcome Savannah Tate to the show today. Hi, Savannah.
Hi.
How's it going?
You know, it's going good.
Good, good. Well, I'm just so thrilled to talk with you today. I've been following your family's journey for months now, and I was so excited when you agreed to share your journey. People may recognize you from Instagram and your family and your sweet little boy, Hayes. But for people that may not know you, Savannah, and your family, can you give me a little background?
Yeah, so I have six kids, three of which are triplets.
Wow.
And so life is kind of crazy at my house. But on top of that, my youngest, who's also one of the triplets, but he's my youngest, he has been battling brain cancer for the past 9 months. So we're heading into month 10, and hopefully we're going to get the good news this month that we are done.
I hope so. Well, let's go back. We're definitely going to get into this past year as like the major part of this story, but let's go back to early motherhood. You have six kids.
Yes.
Let's think back when you just had your one. Like, was motherhood, when you first had your first, what you thought it would be? And what were those early days of motherhood like for you?
So the early days of motherhood, if there's anything I can look back on, it is everything was drama. I mean, everything was so hard. Everything was the hardest experience of my life. So, it's so funny because I was stressing all the time. Like, how am I going to get my child? My husband was playing football at the University of Utah at the time. And we had one child. And I was always stressing about, okay, getting him to the football games, making sure he was happy the whole time. I mean, those were my stresses in life.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I stressed all the time about getting him down for naps, keeping him on schedule. That was what consumed my life as motherhood.
Yeah.
And getting him to eat food and, you know, I mean, typical motherhood things. But you realize as each child comes that it's not as big of a deal.
Right. But in that moment, it seems like the biggest deal. And I think that's okay to feel like that's the biggest deal. And you have it super hard.
every mom has to go through that. Yes. Every mom has to feel it.
Yes,
totally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What were the best parts of motherhood for you during that time?
I think just discovering what kind of a style I wanted to have as a mom. Mm. I think learning to fall in love with someone new, a child, and learning that this is what I love. I don't know. I never envisioned myself as having lots of kids, but each time I had a child, it was like my heart just opened up wider, and
I love that.
I just fell more and more in love with what my calling was.
Yeah. And I love that. I love that, how that can expand your vision of what is possible in your future and how it could be even better than you thought it was going to be. And you just never know what's around the next corner because now you have six.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I love that. Well, for people that are adding new children to their family, that can be really stressful. You know, you kind of wonder, like, do we rock the equilibrium? We have a good thing going. Do we dare add another one? And what's that going to be like? How was that transitioning from one to two and two to three and three to six? Yeah. What did you do to kind of prepare for each transition, or you know, how did that kind of go in your family?
Well, I think that guilt of adding a new one is always there for mm-hmm. everyone. I mean, I had it each time. You have that guilt and that worry that you're going to lose the relationship you've established and lose the routine you've established. But I think the hardest transition for me actually was going from one to two mm-hmm. because I had such a close bond to my first one, and that guilt really took over on by bringing in a second one.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that you realize is that your kids need each other also. So yeah, you have this perfect routine, but your kids need the love of a sibling also. Mm-hmm. And it changes the dynamic of your family, but your kids learn to, your kids get this new best friend. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome.
Yeah. And I think we tend to focus more on like the guilt part, like, oh, we're taking attention away from them versus what we're adding to
totally.
Their life. So we just get to choose what we focus on, but oftentimes right. we focus on that negative part, which is a total bummer.
Totally.
But I think it's common.
And like I said, like I think everyone feels it with each child, but I think as you see their relationship grow, you realize, okay, I am giving so much to them.
Yeah, absolutely. So you carried three babies, single babies first, and then you carried triplets. I want to know, what is that like having three babies in your belly?
Okay, so three babies in your belly. I get asked this a lot, but it actually was not as crazy as you think because
okay.
my stomach was so tight. It wasn't like my stomach was moving all over the place, you
right.
know, kind of thing. Like you expect like aliens like going around in your stomach. That's not how it was, but it was really cool.
Yeah. Did you feel a lot different in that pregnancy, like exhaustion wise and things like that?
I was a lot sicker the first 3 months. And then the odd thing was, is you're supposed to eat, like, from what I've read, you're supposed to eat like 5,000 calories a day. And there's no way.
You're like Michael Phelps, yeah.
You have no room in your belly. None. There's no room for food. So I was forcing myself to eat. Whereas with the other pregnancies,
right.
I was like hungry all the time. And I wanted to eat. And I was like craving all this food. And this time I was just like, ugh, I feel so full all the time.
There's already three babies taking up all
yes.
that space. Like there's no room for a cheeseburger. Yeah.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah, that must have been really, really strange. Does multiples run in your family, or were you completely shocked to find out
well,
there's three?
We were completely shocked, but I mean, twins do run on both sides of our family.
Okay.
But triplets is just like a whole other world. I mean,
totally.
You see twins all the time. I had never even seen a family with triplets ever. So it was, I mean, now I see it all the time
right.
because I'm more aware, but
right.
before I was just like, what,
we're a circus.
We're freaks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
So fun. And so you go on to have three babies. How long did you carry them?
So it was actually only 31 weeks, 5 days. So
okay.
it wasn't the longest pregnancy ever. I'm sure
yeah.
if I would have gone farther than that, I would have been miserable.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I kind of hit that point where mm-hmm. I was like, okay, we're ready to go.
And right.
So, yeah.
And then were they in the NICU for a little while?
They were in the NICU for 45 days.
Okay. And they were all doing well and healthy and everything?
Yeah, I mean, they all got put on a ventilator at first and oxygen and, you know, some things like that. But it was only for a few days. And then after that, it was just feeding and growing.
What a miracle.
So,
that is just amazing. That is just amazing to me. And so once you brought the three home and you had a total of six under your roof, I mean, how did you survive each day? How did you have the energy to just attend to all of their needs and give attention to the older ones when the babies, I'm sure, were just so demanding?
Oh, it was a real adjustment. But mm-hmm. here's the thing, like, you can't do it alone. And
yeah.
that's the one thing I realized. Like, I needed help from other people. So the times where I knew I had to give all my attention to the babies, I had to ask for help with my older ones.
Yeah.
But the thing that was cool about having multiples at the end is that my older kids could help.
Mm-hmm.
So they have, like, really bonded with the babies. And they dove right in. My husband had to take an integral part. And I think with past babies, I mean, the interesting thing was he couldn't really get that bonding time. I think dads usually miss on that. But he had to totally dive in and feed them bottles. He took rounds of feeding them by himself so I could get some sleep. I mean, he had to really bond with them.
Yeah, it kind of forces you into that, like, okay, we're reaching out. And I'm sure that that was good for him to feel, like, more bonded to the babies and for your older kids to feel really needed.
Yeah. So it was like, it felt more like a team effort.
Yeah, that's so awesome. So now that the triplets are 18 months old, would you say it's harder to have triplet babies or triplet 18-month-old toddlers?
Oh my gosh, it is so crazy. I mean, everything you imagine about triplets and twins is happening right now.
Right, they're all over the place, aren't they?
They feel all over my house. My house cannot stay clean. And I just can't help but laugh all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I turn around and one's getting into the pantry, dumping food on the floor. And I turn back around and my other child's, you know, throwing rice on the floor. It's just crazy. But it's so, it's after what I've been through the past 9 months, this is like so awesome.
Welcomed. Yeah. And so is humor your coping mechanism in those like moments where you're just like, welcome to my world?
Totally. I mean, like the first moment, like I see like, oh, my child, like yesterday, my child's dumping kicks all over my other daughter's head. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm like, my first moment was like, I'm kind of mad. And then all of a sudden I'm like, no, this is hilarious. Yeah. Like, this is exactly what I envisioned toddlers.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, they have their moments of craziness, but they're also, like, getting independent, and I can, you know, get on my phone and be on a phone call for a second.
Right, that's
before
nice.
Before, I felt like I was completely trapped and had three babies that I needed to take care of 100%.
Right, and we always think, like, oh, just got to get to that next stage. But with each new stage are new hard things and new great things. So, you know, you're never going to be out of the woods as a mom.
Right. No, that's so true.
That's amazing. Well, I love hearing about your family. That just sounds like so fun, so much fun.
It really is.
So let's dive deeper into this past year. So you have your triplet babies, they're growing and thriving, and then you notice some things start to be a little bit different with Hayes. Will you tell me what you started to notice with him prior to his diagnosis?
Yeah, so it all happened around the 9-month mark. I had just taken my babies in for their 9-month well child visit. And I mentioned, you know, Hayes is really grumpy, and he looked in his ears and he's like, oh, he has an ear infection. All three of your babies have an ear infection. I was like, oh, okay, so let's get him on antibiotics. And we got him on antibiotics, and my other two babies got better, but Hayes just was sleeping constantly. He was really grumpy when he was awake, and it wasn't like him. Like, there was no consoling him. So I took him back into the doctor, and I was sure he was going to say, oh, yeah, he still has an ear infection. But he's like, no, his ears are perfect. Mm. So I was like, well, he's so grumpy. Like, I don't know what is going on. And he's like, well, he's just a grumpy 9-month-old. That's just kind of what happens. And I was able to compare him with the other two and kind of be like, well, I mean, I understand that some babies are grumpy, but it doesn't just happen all of a sudden.
Right.
And so, I mean, through a lot of trial and error, I would rule out, okay, it's not teething. Because I gave him Tylenol, and then I would rule out, well, it's not, you know, this, because my other babies aren't getting it. So I took him to the ER, and they also said, well, he has a virus, and he started throwing up at the hospital. So we realized, oh, okay, he's got a stomach bug. That explains so much, and that helps understand what's going on with us. Mm-hmm. But 5 days later, he's still throwing up everything he gets, and he's sleeping 100% of the time. He wouldn't even lift his head when I laid him on the ground. Like, I started to notice an extreme decrease in muscle strength, and use of his left side was decreasing. So that's when I called my husband up one day at work, and I was like, hon, we got to take him to the ER again. I'm really nervous about what's going on. And it's weird because, like, you talk to a doctor and you couldn't really put like, oh, here's exactly what's happening. It, right. It was just a gut feeling at the end of the day that something was seriously wrong. And that's what got us to the ER.
Wow. And so were you expecting something as dramatic as cancer? Or were you, like, did you have anything in your mind of what it could be?
So another thing I forgot to mention is that he had a raised soft spot. And so when I started looking up raised soft spot, it was saying meningitis was one of the possibilities, or hydrocephalus. And so I was pretty convinced it was hydrocephalus because he wasn't having any fevers. Which would be meningitis.
Yeah.
So I ruled out meningitis, but I was pretty sure they were going to say hydrocephalus. And when I went in and they did the CAT scan, I was sure that's what they were going to come back and say, which it was actually, but right. It was as a result of the tumor. So
when they told you your son has a brain tumor, I know it's probably hard to talk about, but what is that like, getting that type of news?
Well, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
My husband and I were in the ER, and I could just tell. I mean, I knew, I like I said, I had a feeling it was hydrocephalus or something like that. But I knew it was something serious.
Right.
But cancer never was a part of my mind, you know. I mean, I remember when I took him into the ER the first time, they're like, well, it's not leukemia. And I was like, leukemia? What? I wasn't even thinking cancer. Right, what right. are you talking about, leukemia? Yeah. So, she comes in and she's like, so we have an answer. And it just broke my heart because I knew at that moment, like, if you have an answer from a CAT scan, it's not good.
Right.
And she pulls up the image, and I was holding Hayes in my arms, and I just broke down. Just like, it was an out-of-body experience, like, crying and screaming, and she just said, I'm so sorry. Like, she just kept apologizing, and it was the worst moment of my life. Like, there's just no question, it was the most devastating experience ever.
And it's just those few words that you know are going to change the trajectory of your near future and perhaps the longer future.
Totally.
Oh, that uncertainty.
That was a turning point.
Right.
That was major. Yeah.
Wow, Savannah. So what did they tell you next? What did they say was going to be the course of action?
So at that point, we had lots of doctors in and out. And the first person who came in was a neurosurgeon, and he said, okay, so we don't know if this is cancerous, but we know there's a tumor, and we need to get it out because it's causing a lot of pressure in his brain, and we need to get that out as soon as possible. So our goal is, what he said is, our goal is to get it all out, but we'll see what we can do. A lot of problems with brain tumors is that it can cause brain bleeds, and you know, it's super dangerous. So a lot of times they're not able to take the whole thing out.
Right.
But they said, we need to get him in, and we're going to get him in first thing in the morning. So this was like at 6 o'clock at night at this point. And they immediately, put him on, I'm trying to think, they took him in for an MRI. So they kept him sedated the whole night.
Wow.
Yeah. And my husband and I were just in the PICU on this little recliner, like this one teeny recliner, not a wide recliner,
yeah.
like this teeny recliner. And I just laid on his lap the whole night, and we just cried the whole night. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I just can't even, it just gives me chills putting myself in your shoes. I feel for you.
The thing that's crazy is you don't realize like how, like you can put yourself in someone else's shoes, but it's like, this is exactly what I would imagine is like from a movie, and
right.
I'm living it. Like
right.
how does this happen?
How is
it's
this my
crazy
life?
How quickly
yeah.
your life becomes what you've dreaded your whole entire life.
Absolutely, absolutely. So how did that surgery go the next day?
The next day they took him in, and they were actually able to take the whole tumor out in
wow.
2.5 hours. It was way faster than he was expecting. And he comes in and he sits us down. He's like, I got it all out. He's like, I actually can't believe I got it all out.
Oh.
He's like, but I did. And it was that you kind of start to measure each day with like these silver linings. Mm-hmm. And that was like one of those silver linings where it's like, okay, here we go. But he did say, okay, we don't know if it's cancer yet. We have to send it in for pathology, but we did see that there's some along his spine. Mm-hmm. So he's like, he's got a long road ahead of him, but we've got the first major, most dangerous part of it over with. Oh. So it was like, okay.
I'll cling to that today. Yeah.
Clinging to that today.
Right. Exactly. Right. And so then how long before you got more information?
So it was a long time. It was 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So we were in the hospital for 5 days of recovery. And then we took him home, and he started to do so well. I think all of a sudden, just, like, that pressure off of his brain, he was just, like, thriving again. And we were just happy, and it was, like, all of a sudden, like, what's the big deal about a brain tumor? Like, this is easy.
Look what we did, yeah.
So, anyway, we get the call, and it was the neurosurgeon, and he said, okay, well, pathology came back, and we conference called in my husband, who was at work. And he's like, okay, it's called a choroid plexus carcinoma. Have you ever heard of that? And I was like, no. And my husband, of course, said no. And he's like, okay, well, it's a cancer and it's pretty aggressive, but we'll just get you started on chemo and I'll hand you over to the oncology team and they'll get you started. And that was the gist of our conversation. So we get off the phone and I'm like, okay, the first thing you do is you start Googling choroid plexus carcinoma, and it is a scary thing to Google, I'll tell you that, because it is super rare, and I think it's something like 1 in every 3 million brain tumors is a choroid plexus carcinoma.
Oh my gosh.
So it was, and the research, all that I could find on it was like medical journals from the 1980s, and they were like, prognosis is not good. So I was just devastated. I went from just, like, clinging to that hope to now just, like, starting over again. Mm. So it was scary.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. And there's so much to learn, and yet you don't want to just trust everything you read on the internet, but you're just, like, I'm sure just grasping for any information.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And the thing is I was like, well, here's the thing. Yeah, it's 1 in every 3 million brain tumors, but there's got to be someone else out there.
Right. And so were there any resources that you found that did give you some insight or some perspective?
Yeah. So actually, the cool thing that I found, social media has become like something huge during this fight for our family, because I was able to go on Facebook and search the hashtag choroid plexus carcinoma. And this mom popped up whose daughter had been in remission for 3 years from this exact cancer. So I messaged her and I was just like, which is so not like me. Like, I'm not I'm the type who's just really closed off, but I was like, when your child is sick, you don't care.
Right.
What it is. You're reaching out to anybody. So I reached out to this mom and I just said, please just tell me anything. Like, what advice can you give me? What can you tell me about this? Mm-hmm. And she wrote back and she said, all I can tell you is your child's stronger than you think he is. Don't be scared of the numbers, because your child is stronger than those numbers. And you're going to be the mom that that someone else reaches out to in a few years. And it was just the most powerful experience, really, like, for me to realize that I wasn't alone.
Yeah.
And I felt this bond to this woman who was clear across the country. And I was just like, she didn't give me any technical terms. It was just, you can do this.
Right.
And it was exactly what I needed to hear.
Absolutely. And it's like, no statistic knows your haze and knows your family and knows your determination. And you can do anything. Yeah.
Right.
That's a great word of advice. You know, if we might know somebody that's going through something hard, you know, not necessarily giving them any specific information, but just saying, you can do it. I believe in you. I'm here for you.
For real. And I mean, I think doctors cling to numbers because
that's
what they do. They're scientists. Mm-hmm. But for me, I just know that the human spirit is stronger than that.
Yeah.
And I knew that Hayes was stronger than what those numbers showed.
Absolutely. And that's what I love so much about the spirit that you put out in social media and everything. It's just so hopeful and inspiring. Even on your hardest days, there was still that underlying positivity, but not just happy-go-lucky kind of positivity, but just that hope, just that undying hope for tomorrow. Well,
at the end of the day, if I lose hope, then it's over.
Yeah.
And I will never lose hope in my child.
Yes.
I can't.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you started that course of treatment, and it was a very long road. Tell me about those long days in the hospital and those ups and downs that you experienced. How did you handle all that?
So it was so long. Our course of treatment is really different than most cancers. Mm. Like leukemia, a lot of treatment is at home. So I was expecting, I didn't know what to expect. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So we go in, and each round was about, our goal was 28 days. And we were in the hospital for at least 17 of those 28 days.
Wow.
So he receives chemo the first from day one. And he receives it for about 7 days straight. And then the sickness doesn't usually hit until about day seven. And those were the long days because he was miserable. He was sleeping a lot. So the room was usually just completely dark. And I just sat in this empty, not this empty, but this dark hospital room and just thought a lot, you know?
Right. And where did your mind go?
I think what got me through those days was mostly, research. I would reach out to other moms. I would research everything I could to make his life as comfortable as possible as we went through this. I knew that I wanted to be as aggressive as possible to kill this cancer, but I knew I also wanted him to be comfortable. So I was researching, supplements. Just weird stuff, but you'll do anything you can.
Totally. And
I think it made a huge difference. So
absolutely. And I'm sure there were days where you saw bits of your haze back, and saw that brightness in his eyes again. And then there were days where, like you said, the sickness really kicked in and hit. You knew that it was going to be a long road, and you knew that those days, it wasn't just going to be one day of that. It was going to be a lot. How did you really gear up for staying strong in yourself and with your husband? How did you go forward with that type of strength to get through that?
Like I said, I guess I knew going into it, I was like, the first two rounds for me, I would, in a weird way, were like, I was pretty clueless because I was like, well, this is, I just have to kill this cancer, so it's going to make him sick, so whatever, but it's killing the cancer. So I just was so sure that it was working. I had no problems whatsoever doing what we were doing. I was just like, well, he's going to get sick and, we're going to have a few days of hard. But it was way different than that because he gets really sick and for a few days, your child is not even there, like in a weird way, he like removes himself from the pain. And so, but they, at the end of the day, they know you're there.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, you just know that you have to go through this in order to get out the other side.
Right.
And so that's what kept pushing me through. I just knew it was worth it because the alternative is what? Go home and just let it take over.
Right.
So our choice was to just fight. And that's what it was. Every day I would just tell my husband, let's just fight through this.
Right.
We're going to make it through, but we're fighting through right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure you had concerns for your other five kids at home. How were you in like dividing your mind space with, concern for them and having their needs met and everything while being present and strong for Hayes?
Yeah, that was the hardest part.
I'm sure.
What I took advantage of was my kids were in school, so I spent the whole morning with Hayes. So I would spend until about 3 or 4 o'clock with Hayes at the hospital. Then my husband and I would switch. So he would come up and I would switch with him and he would stay with Hayes while I went home and I did homework with the kids. I'd run them to, their practices or whatever. I would spend the afternoons with them, make dinner with them, sit down and eat dinner with them, and then put them to bed. Mm-hmm. And I had to hire someone to help me with the babies in order to do that. So I hired someone who came every day from 3 to 9 o'clock and helped me with the babies so that I could, you know, do homework with my kids and divide my time up equally. So
yeah, you just do what you got to do. You're like, okay, this is what we're dealing with. What do we need to do?
It's like you're missing out on like these huge parts of your child's life, like learning to walk. My husband had to send me a video, you know, like it is just like the craziest thing. But at the same time, at the end of the day, I was like, I'm just fighting through this. I am fighting through this. And at the end of the day, I would do this for any of my children.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter who it was. So.
Absolutely. And like you said, like you were a team, like you were all in this together fighting.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
It totally did. It felt like we were a team.
Yeah. And I'm sure that your other kids sensed that and just knew like, mom's doing her best. You know, that we're all just doing our best. We don't know how to do this.
You're definitely giving these tender mercies.
Yeah.
And I remember having the discussion with my older son, who's 10 years old, and he was having a hard day with it. And I just said, you know, Bo, at the end of the day, if you were sick, I would be with you at the hospital all day.
Yeah.
He's like, I know you would, Mom.
Yeah.
So, you have to face these things. Your children have to face these things that you would never expect that any child has to face.
Absolutely. Do you have any advice for any mom that might be struggling today? Maybe it's a health diagnosis or health struggle, or maybe it's their marriage is struggling, or they're having, you know, just tough times with their kids. Do you have any advice for going through a really hard time, and what have you learned through this process?
I think if I could say anything, I think this whole thing has put everything into perspective for me.
Mm-hmm.
Those little things of, well, my child didn't sleep through the night, or, you know, I have so much cleaning to do around the house, or my husband's bugging me because he's, you know.
Yeah.
There's so many things. But at the end of the day, you get to wake up every day. Your child is healthy, or maybe is a little sick, has a cold.
Mm-hmm.
Your child is waking up every day.
Yeah.
And you get to be with your child. And those are the things you learn to appreciate. You learn to appreciate the simple things.
Right.
And those things that bug you about, you know, that seem huge in the moment are not as big when you're faced with a life-changing situation like this.
Absolutely. And how have you changed as a mom? I mean, think back from just having your one child so many years ago to now having gone through this experience and being a mom of six. How have you evolved as a mom throughout all of this experience?
Maybe it's a personality trait, but I just have become way more easygoing and way more appreciative of what my children offer my life. And you know, not every child is perfect.
Yeah.
And my children are far from perfect, but I am too, you know, and you become much more forgiving of little things because you realize it doesn't matter. And all that really matters is love and family and memories and creating happiness. You know, I mean, there's going to be hard times, but your job at the end of the day is just to be present. And that's what I found more than anything. I think that's the thing, the piece of advice I could give to any mom out there is just be present. And it doesn't mean you have to go out and take your kids to the zoo every day or do a big thing. It just means being there and letting them know that you love them. I think that's being present.
Right. And that can take place in a hospital room that is quiet and painful. Or
totally.
It can be in a bustling house of six, you know, like it can look
totally.
So different, but just showing up for your kids, they can feel your love and your commitment to them in any situation.
Totally.
Do you think your kids, your other kids have been changed by this experience? And in what way do you see them being different now having gone through this?
I feel like they are much more empathetic.
Mm.
They have an awareness of cancer, which most kids don't.
And you would wish that on them, but it is what it is. Yeah.
But I think they're way more empathetic and so much more helpful. it's amazing because, like, yesterday I was walking my kids to school, and I'm pushing the stroller with all the babies in it, and Hayes starts throwing up as we're walking, and my daughter, my 8-year-old daughter, gets a towel, and, like, without me even saying anything, she's putting it under his mouth and, like, stroking his head while he's throwing up. I'm like, you know, that is just so amazing. That's something you cannot teach a child.
Yeah.
It is a learned behavior, and they have been forced to learn this, and they've become really just such kind, loving kids through this.
You must be so proud. You must be, you must be so proud of them.
I really am. I'm so proud.
Oh, that's amazing. That is so amazing. So how many days, I think you put the number on Instagram at one point, so that's why I'm asking, how many days was he in the hospital of the last year?
So he has been in the hospital about 125 days overnight.
Wow.
So those are for various things, for, you know, surgeries or chemo. They won't even let you leave your hospital room until your counts get up to a certain number.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in the hospital room for 125 plus-ish days.
Wow.
But we go in for another surgery on Monday to get a G-tube put in.
Wow. Okay. Was that expected?
So it's slightly expected, but the problem is when you are dealing with the brain, your child has to relearn a lot of things.
Right.
So he has to relearn how to swallow more accurately, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the G-tube is just going to help him get that nutrition without the worry of aspiration.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure that you're like, it's a bummer that that has to happen, but you also realize it, you know, this will help him get stronger and meet those milestones that he previously missed. Yeah. So you just have to keep going, like you said, with all these other things.
What I was saying before, you just realize, well, I mean, he's here.
Yeah. So
I'll take it.
I'll take the G-tube if it means Hayes. Yeah. So he just recently finished up with all of his treatments, and what was that like walking out of the hospital? I mean, I know that you knew that it wasn't quite done. There would still be, you know, future things like this G-tube and whatnot. But what was that like walking out and saying the treatments are done for now? We're taking home Hayes.
Well, it's just like a new beginning. We can start life again. You know, it's like a reborn. And it was so happy for our family. We've just spent so much time together, and we're not able to do a lot because of Hayes, but we're together, and you appreciate those simple things because you're with the people you love, and it was just so happy, and it made you believe, it makes you believe in that there is hope in the world, and there is goodness, and we're part of a miracle. So it was pretty miraculous.
Yeah. And some people might assume, okay, now that you're done, yay, life goes back to normal, but it doesn't. And your husband posted something on Instagram lately about how it's actually harder almost now that the treatments are done, because now you're sitting with this reflection feeling like, what have we been through? What just happened? And not having that to kind of occupy your mind space. And now that it's quieter, you think more about it. What is this new normal like for you? Because it may not be what you assumed it would be, right?
Totally. Well, I mean, I assumed cancer's gone and we just start life up again.
Right.
And like I said, it is, you do in a way. But like I said, it's like a rebirth.
Yeah.
And this is our new normal. And my child has a long road ahead of him of learning to do a lot of the things that he used to know how to do.
Mm.
And it's kind of like when I read a quote recently that said, you know, when you make it through, when you've just been through a battle and there's been a war, you have injuries, and people go home and are like, okay, yeah, we won, but there's injuries that still are unresolved, and you still have to heal. And I feel like we're in that phase where it's all of a sudden hitting us, like, what we've just been through. We at least had, like, chemo and, like, the fight to get through before, and now we've made it through the fight, and it's the little things, like, noticing he's not the same as my other two. And, you know, just things like that, you start to those are the things that you start to notice, and those are your new normal. So it's hard. It is hard, but like I said, I was surrounded by so much sadness for so long that I can't help but be appreciative of where I'm at in an odd way.
No, absolutely. And I think that's really important for outsiders to know. We might be looking onto a family that might be going through something like you and assuming like, okay, they're not in that like desperate stage where, you know, they need help and they need meals and they need, because they're, you know, someone's at the hospital stuff. Recognizing that life doesn't just like snap of your fingers, go back to normal, and realize you might still need some support. You definitely still need a hand extended at times, and definitely continued prayers and phone calls and support, because, you know, it doesn't just snap back to normal.
Well, and I think now is the time when I need the emotional support more than anything, because before it was like, okay, I don't even have time to talk about my feelings. Like, we just phone for this and we're fighting. And now it's like, oh, okay, my kids are all taking a nap and I get to sit here and think about what we've just been through and what we are facing. And it's scary. It's scary.
And do you,
and I may not need a meal, but you know, even just you're doing such a good job, or how can I help you? What can, giving me just a hug is like so empowering for me. So
And you kind of have to read the other person and see, like, do they want to talk about it? Do they not want to talk about it? Do they want to have an outing or have you come over or not? You know, but just asking, like, what do you need? What would you like? Would you like me to come over and sit with you? Would you like
Do you want me to take your older kids again?
Yes.
You know, like, do you want me to take them to the park so you can just, like, maybe you do want alone time in a weird way, which I do sometimes. I just think it's just letting them know they're not alone anymore.
Yes.
Because all of a sudden the crowds dissipate.
Yes.
And the support dwindles because your child's better. Yay.
Right.
But that's when the pain of all of it really comes to the surface.
I think that is a critical, critical takeaway from your story, Savannah. And that really makes me think about some people that I know right now where I should be reaching out instead of just realizing, you know, the critical time has passed, but there's still that residual need. And I could do better to reach out. So I think that's a really important reminder. That's amazing. What do you want people to know about your sweet baby Hayes? He's darling. He's 18 months old. He is just the cutest, has the cutest little face. I mean, all your kids are gorgeous. Your whole family is beautiful.
Well, you're so nice.
What do you want people to know about your sweet Hayes?
You know, I just don't want him to be forgotten in a weird way. I want people to see that he's fighting and he's the face of so many kids.
Yeah.
He is the face of thousands of kids that are fighting right now, and he's just, I mean, the amazing thing is every day when you're facing something this difficult as adults, it's so easy to get down. Mm-hmm. He never gave up. I mean, it's just amazing that he always had this fight with them because that's all he knew. That was his life and that's all he knew. And I don't know if it was love from his parents or what, but something was getting him through those days, and he was so strong. Uh-huh. And I mean, the takeaway I can get from him is there's never a reason to give up on a fight.
Wow. 18 months old, and you learned that from him. You know?
I know.
Oh, my gosh. What a blessing. What a blessing to really have that time to stop and look at your boy and learn that from such a little person.
It really is. I feel grateful that I can learn this while he's still young and while my kids are still young.
Yeah, and you can use that as fuel. Well, I mean, now you're a part of a club that you never asked to be a part of, and you are, you know, really being vocal in the month of September about childhood cancer and childhood cancer research, which I just love because it is underfunded, underrecognized. What do you want people to know about childhood cancer research, and what message are you trying to spread now that you're part of this community?
I just feel like I can't even get the information out enough.
I know.
You don't realize that, first off, your local hospital is filled to the brim with cancer kids. You don't realize it. I remember when we first got up there, I was telling my husband, I was like, doesn't it seem like there's more kids with cancer than ever? And he's like, no, we just have never noticed it before.
Yeah.
We've never looked. There are kids filling the cancer units. And on top of that, the government only gives 4% of allotted funds to research for kids.
Kids.
And it breaks my heart. I mean, yes. Here you thought, I did a post today about how in the NFL right now, there's all these protests going on and there's, you know, people taking knees because of injustices. And it's like, you know what? They need to, every single one of those players should take a knee for this very reason. This is not okay that kids are not being fought for. There's no voice for these kids. I had no idea. I was one of those people before. Yeah. I had no idea. And these kids are being forgotten and it's not where the money is for the pharmaceutical companies, so they don't care. Wow. There's no fight for these kids, and it breaks my heart. And I will not stop yelling about it. You know, I will fight for these kids for the rest of my life.
And I think you're doing an amazing job, and I know that you'll continue making an impact in this community. And I'm sorry that you have to be a part of it now, but you are. And so many of us go through things where it's like we didn't choose it. But now that you're a part of this and now that you have a voice, you have to speak up. You have to tell your story.
Exactly.
It can make a difference.
It would be unfair of me to make it out and then not say what it was like and what these kids are going through. It would be unfair. And that's why I'm saying I don't want Hayes forgotten, because what he's been through is the face of so many.
Yeah.
It's my duty as his mom to fight for him and all these kids.
Wow. Savannah, I think you are truly extraordinary. I think Hayes is extraordinary, but the strength and the hope and the grace really with which you've gone through this journey, it just impresses me. But more than just, you know, I don't think you're out to impress anybody for sure, but you inspire me. I think that's the better word.
Thank you. That is so nice. Honestly, I'm not seeking it. I'm really not.
I know.
If people are going to listen, I'm going to tell them. And there's so much good in the world and there's so much hope. We hear all about these negative things happening in the world. And you know what? There's happiness and hope and joy right in our own lives. Mm. And this is what we should live for.
Yeah. This is right what it's now. All about. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, Savannah, I always ask my guests one final question, and it's this: what would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
Oh my gosh. I think it just goes along with the theme of what I've been saying. Enjoy it. Each moment that you have, whether it's pre-children and you're just with your husband, enjoy it. Make the most out of it. Go see the world with your husband. And then when you have kids, go see the world with your kids. You know, I mean, you are creating a legacy and it's beautiful. And tell your story and be authentic. And every story is beautiful. And I just feel blessed to know this now. It wasn't even just pre-motherhood that I needed to know this. It was pre-Hayes that I needed to know this. And I'm just grateful that I know it now. So.
And you have a lot of life left to live out knowing that.
Yeah.
With that perspective. Yeah.
Yes.
I love that. Savannah, I think you're amazing, like I've said, and I'm really grateful that you shared your story, and I had so many takeaways, and this was just a great way to start my day. So thank you.
This will
come out on Tuesday. And so, previous to that on Monday, he's having his G-tube surgery. So we just pray that that goes really well and that he will continue to thrive and grow and have a clean bill of health and
you
can just thrive in your new normal.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And so for people that are just, I know, endeared to you now, where can they find you on social media?
So on Facebook, we have a site for Hayes. It's called Hayes Tough. And then on Instagram, it's just my life and my kid's life. And it's Savannah. So S-A-V-A-N-N-A-T and the number 8. So Savannah Tate.
awesome. And I'll put all those links in the show notes on extraordinarymomspodcast.com, and there'll be family photos there so you can see your gorgeous family and your sweet Hayes. Thanks, Savannah. I hope you have a wonderful day, and I hope that surgery goes really well next week.
Thank you. Thank you, Jessica.
Have an awesome day.
Hey, you too. Okay, bye.
Is Savannah amazing or what? I was just blown away by that conversation and her story. She is such a great example of showing up for your kids and loving them throughout all circumstances. And even when her time was divided between being there for Hayes at the hospital and missing her kids and some of their firsts at home, I love her perspective on just doing what you can do in that season and realizing that you would do it for any of your kids. And so not letting that mom guilt take over, but to just be grateful for what you have, be present, and just enjoy it. And so thanks, Savannah. If you want any more information, you can go to our podcast website, extraordinarymomspodcast.com. You can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3. And if you haven't already done so, I would love it if you'd go over to iTunes and rate and review the show. Those really help new moms to find the podcast, and I want to reach as many people as possible with these inspiring stories. I love it so much. And so thanks for doing that if you've already have. And I hope everyone has a wonderful week. Enjoy your kids. Hug them extra tight. Be grateful for their health. And know that you can do hard things. Thanks for joining me today. And I'll see you next week for another episode with another Extraordinary Mom.